Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to WBH Sports Radio. I'm your host, William Holly. Thank you for tuning in to episode number 41. Recording here at the great campus of Brooklyn College. Shout out to all the students here at the radio station. You can check them out on social media at MyWBCR. A couple things we're going to get into today. I want to talk about the return of Carmelo Anthony to the NBA. I also want to discuss LeBron James and the Los Angeles Lakers. They really just been handling business lately, currently sitting atop the Western Conference standings. Also want to get into Alabama quarterback Tua Tagovailoa to discuss the decision he has to make here shortly, whether to return to school after his gruesome hip injury, or does he move forward and take his chances in the NFL draft next spring? But first, I want to start with the Dallas Cowboys. The last couple of weeks, the last couple of games, much of the conversation has been about their head coach, Jason Garrett, and whether or not he should be fired. Every other day, this is the game he's going to be let go. Jerry should let him go here. The players quit on him. The players don't want to play for him. Week after week, day after day, First Take, Undisputed. And as I sat back and watched that play out, I thought to myself, man, Jerry Jones accomplished his mission. Accomplished his mission of having Jason Garrett in place to be a scapegoat. That's the only reason Jason Garrett is there, to keep the heat off of the real problem, which is the owner, Jerry Jones. You know, Jones has came out recently and he expressed his frustration with the coaching staff and how much money he spent. He spent too much money to be this frustrated. Well, Jerry, you the guy that controls this coach's destiny. If he's not performing, get him out of there. But the reason that won't happen is because the minute Jason Garrett is fired, guess what? The clock starts to tick on Jerry Jones. The fans' frustration turns to Jerry Jones. The media's attention turns to Jerry Jones. The man that's been at the helm of all of this underachieving. And he doesn't want that. So as these conversations has taken place over the last week, I'm like, you sly dog Jerry Jones. You got exactly what you wanted. You see, Jerry's the boss. If you don't want that coach in place, get him out of there. But he won't do that. Because the truth will be exposed. There will be no one for him to hide behind. And as I really started to dig into the Dallas Cowboys, this is Jerry's MO, right? He not just wants to win, but he wants to win his way. And that's why Jason Garrett has even been allowed to stick around for 10 years. Jerry Jones has won 3 Super Bowls during his tenure as owner of the Dallas Cowboys. 2 of those Super Bowls were coached by a man by the name of Jimmy Johnson. Jerry let Jimmy Johnson go because Jimmy wouldn't allow Jerry to pick players. So although they were having success, Jerry let him go, right? He not only just wanted to win, but he wanted to win his way. So he let go a 2-time Super Bowl winning coach. After Jimmy Johnson, there was a gentleman by the name of Barry Switzer. Barry Switzer ended up winning the Super Bowl. And guess what? They parted ways as well. You see, Jerry is not interested in having a real coach in place. He wants somebody he can control. So when he gets in front of the media and he says, I'm frustrated with my coach, and dog, pull a plug if you don't like him. Let me tell you guys something. Jason Garrett has been in place for 10 years. You know good and damn well what that man is capable of. Not only has Jason Garrett been in place for 10 years, but he was a quarterback for the organization for 7 years. You had that man in your building for 17 plus seasons. And oh yeah, before he was the head coach, he was the offensive coordinator. Jerry Jones keeps this man around. Don't let him confuse you. Don't let him trick you into believing, oh, I'm so frustrated. Nah, dog. You like the fact that the conversation is involving Jason Garrett because that keeps the heat off of you. 10 years Jason Garrett has been in place. He should have been let go a long time ago. Dallas Cowboys ain't been into the NFC Championship game in how long? But Jerry's trying to hoodwink us. He don't want a real leader in that place. I want to go over the history of the coaches that have worked under Jerry Jones. Okay, I mentioned Jimmy Johnson and Barry Switzer. Okay. Do you know the other Dallas coaches that were in place? A dude by the name of Chan Gailey. Who the hell is that? Dave Campo. Two names I've never heard since then. Right? Why were they in place? Probably because they let Jerry do what he want. Another head coach, Wade Phillips. Wade Phillips is a career-long coordinator. And then he had Bill Parcells, the big tuna. Bill Parcells only lasted 3 seasons with the Cowboys. Bill Parcells, a man that won 2 Super Bowls as the head coach with the New York Giants. A man that had the New England Patriots in the Super Bowl before Bill Belichick. A man that took the New York Jets to the AFC Championship game. Bill Parcells, a man in his first year in the front office of the Miami Dolphins, helped them to a 10-game turnaround. They won 10 more games than they did the year previously when he wasn't there. That's Bill Parcells' resume, and he only got 3 years with Dallas. Yet Jerry Jones gives Jason Garrett 10 years? Stop letting Jerry Jones distract you from what is the real problem, which is him. Jerry Jones can't get out of his own way. His ego is in place. Jerry's the owner, the general manager. Anytime he's had real leaders in that building, like Jimmy Johnson, short-lived. Short-lived. So I actually feel sorry for Jason Garrett, man. If he's bad, put him out of his misery and fire him. But no, you're just keeping him in place. Poking and prodding. Every day in the media, mentioning his name. He'll be a coach somewhere. In preseason. I don't know if we'll give him an extension. Just using Jason Garrett as your whipping boy. To mask the fact that you are subpar at your job. You know, you watch the Dallas Cowboys games and you look up in that skybox and who is it? Jerry Jones and his cronies. Jerry Jones, his son Stephen Jones. Some days it's Governor Chris Christie. Dog, I thought they do things big in Texas. Jerry Jones, you got America's team. You got one of the best facilities. You talk about the money and the business that you could do. Well, let's do it big in the coaching position. If you're serious about winning, how about you go to Alabama and give Nick Saban a blank check? How about you go to Oklahoma and pluck Lincoln Riley from there? If you're serious about winning, if you want to do things big, go to ESPN and snatch up Bill Polian. The general manager that built the Jim Kelly-led Buffalo Bills who went to 4 Super Bowls. The man that helped Peyton Manning and the Indianapolis Colts win a championship. Or go get Ozzie Newsome out of retirement. Ozzie Newsome, a Hall of Fame tight end with the Cleveland Browns. But not only did he do that, he was the general manager that helped the Cleveland Browns turn into the Baltimore Ravens. He helped put together that Ray Lewis-led defense that won a Super Bowl. Then he drafts Joe Flacco. They win another Super Bowl. And before he retires from the Ravens as their first black general manager in history, he drafts Lamar Jackson, That franchise looks like it's set for the next 10 years. If you're serious about winning, put somebody in position to help you get it done. Jerry don't want to win. Jerry want to do it his way. Right? Because with Jason Garrett in place, that distracts people. That distracts the media from going to Jerry and asking him, why did you give Ezekiel Elliott a $90 million contract 2 years before you had to? And that man ain't win you no games this year, Ezekiel Elliott. That's looking like a bad deal, Jerry. But you're not serious about winning. You don't want to bring in Nick Saban. You don't want to bring in these names I mentioned. You know why? Because they ain't going to stand for you walking through their clubhouse every day. They ain't going to take too kindly to you having a daily press conference or a weekly radio show as an owner. Y'all let that man off the hook. Y'all let that man fool you. You know, because he's real nice with the media. They give him a pass. No, he is the problem, dog. You have been the man that has presided over all of this underachieving. It's ego. Jerry Jones wants people that make him feel comfortable. He ain't trying to be great. You know, in researching this topic for the podcast, I mentioned Jimmy Johnson was the head coach of two Super Bowls for Jerry Jones. Barry Switzer was the head coach for another. Jimmy Johnson was a national champion coach at the University of Miami. Barry Switzer was a national championship head coach at Oklahoma. So just in my elementary, knowledge of the situation, I assumed that Jerry went and got the best college coaches he could get to help him be successful. As I looked a little bit deeper, what I found out is Jimmy Johnson and Barry Switzer, outside of being great college coaches, something else they have in common is they were college teammates with Jerry Jones at the University of Arkansas. So, if I was to have a theory, he went and got those men because he thought he could push them around. These are my old college buddies. Again, Jerry and his cronies. He thought they were some soft guys that he could push around. He wasn't looking for greatness. He stumbled across it. But he just, again, reached back in his bag of buddies. Who can I give a check and let them be my crash test dummy and my scapegoat and my punching bag? And when he found out Jimmy Johnson wasn't with it, that relationship was short-lived. It's not going to work, Jimmy. You know, last week I did a topic about the New York Knicks. I talked about how, yes, they haven't been successful, but I don't think you can blame the owner, right? I don't think he's this devil of a person that people make him out to be. It was a string of bad luck, some bad decisions, but I just don't think he was that bad. And my man D is like, oh, you defending the Knicks? Nah, I'm not defending the Knicks. I'm just saying, like, people calling for that man to sell a team, like, I don't see that. And it's funny because recently, Enes Kanter, the Boston Celtics, he came out and said something similar. Like, yo, y'all, lay off Jim Dolan. So today I want to ask you guys a question because I don't have any answers. I just want to ask you guys a question. What is the difference between somebody considered one of the best owners in sports, Mr. Jerry Jones, right? Everybody's favorite uncle, Uncle Jerry. And Jim Dolan, the much maligned owner of the New York Knicks. Because when I stack it up, right? This is what it looks like to me. You guys might say, yo, Will, Jerry Jones, he gave money. Jerry Jones got the most valuable franchise in the NFL. Cool. Jerry Jones got the most valuable franchise in the NFL. Cool. Well, you know what? According to Forbes 2019, the most valuable franchise in the NBA is not the Los Angeles Lakers, is not the Boston Celtics. The most valuable franchise in the NBA is the New York Knickerbockers, owned by Mr. James Dolan. So when you stack those two up, that's a wash to me. Okay, Jerry, you got the most valuable franchise over there, but Dolan got the most valuable franchise over here. That's a wash. So this wide gap between ownership that you talk of, I don't see it. Well, Jerry Jones, he got this amazing facility in Texas, man. Jerry World, you see that big screen right over midfield? Okay, cool, beautiful. James Dolan presides over Madison Square Garden, a place affectionately known as the world's most famous arena. You got your facility, Dolan got his. Again, another wash. And oh yeah, when we talk about valuable franchises, I forgot to mention this. James Dolan owns the most valuable franchise in the National Hockey League as well. My beloved New York Rangers. So Jerry got his football team. Jim Dolan got two of the most valuable franchises and two of the most popular sports in America. You don't believe in Harlem World, nigga, double up. Real niggas double up. Jim Dolan got two of those. So what you saying? So I'm just asking questions today. When you tell me about this big gap between the best owner and the worst owner, I don't see it. In fact, I can make a case for James Dolan being a notch better. Because when things has gotten hard, James Dolan has pushed his ego aside and stepped away and said, yo, maybe I need help. And he brought in Isaiah Thomas, one of the 50 greatest players of all time. He brought in Phil Jackson, one of the greatest coaches in NBA history. When has Jerry Jones ever put his ego aside? No, it's him and his son and the guy that cleans his glasses in that owner's skybox every Sunday. Fumbling around, laughing and giggling with Chris Christie. So I don't see it, guys. Well, Jerry's a cool guy. Everybody loves him. Yeah, you got to be a nice, cool guy. You got to be slick with the tongue when you're selling snake oil. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't see it. That man ain't serious about winning. Jerry Jones is probably nervous because at the end of this year, there's no way he could bring Jason Garrett back. Now what? Now what's he going to do? He got to find another punching bag. He got to find another person that he could poke at in the media and in the public. And every time somebody brings that to Jason Garrett's attention, he just smiles. Oh, you know that's Jerry. Just Jerry. Let him do that to a real leader. Man. I want to switch gears, talk about Carmelo Anthony making his way back to the NBA. In fact, Carmelo Anthony was player of the week last week for the Western Conference, averaging about 22 points. Melo has looked like Melo in his return. But that is my exact issue with his return to the NBA. You know, Melo has, I mean, his very first game back, he started. He's been scoring points. You know Melo got that. That sweet jump shot ain't going anywhere. He going to have that for life. Just looking like the Melo that we have seen over the years. But I have a major problem with that. Because that game, that Melo, I mean, I love it. Me and my people love it. My dogs, I reached out to DA. Man, I love to see Melo back. Kelly Fent, like, we love that Melo. But the league, the general managers, the owners, they cut that Melo last year. They made jokes, and they snickered to the media saying that Melo's washed up. That Melo doesn't deserve a spot in our league. So I'm afraid that Melo hasn't done enough to show these owners that, hey, I'm different. To show these owners that, hey, I deserve to play beyond this year. Watching Melo play this year, you know, shot goes up. He starts backpedaling. Like, he just cool Melo. But I was expecting to see Melo come out with the energy and effort of a D-leaguer to show the world. He's not doing anything to, I guess, specialize himself. I was expecting him to come out and attack the glass and grab 15 rebounds a game and look, league, I'm different. I can do other things. But nah, it's looking like the same guy. 22 points, 7 rebounds. Defensive effort, eh. Melo, we love that game, but they don't. And these are the guys that are deciding your fate. Melo's played 8 games with the Blazers. They're 4-4. Right? They're currently out of the playoff picture at 9-13. And you hear people talking about, yeah, man, Melo deserves this, man. This is his farewell tour. Farewell tour? He's trying to play for another 4 or 5 years. I'm afraid he hasn't done enough to show these guys, hey, I need to be around. And it makes me nervous that they made him player of the week. That was kind of like a sentimental thing. Like, you know, guys, this is his last year. But it shouldn't. They gave him player of the week in a week when James Harden averaged 42. Luka averaged 30. It was a sentimental thing. Like, here you go, Melo, on your way out the door. But he shouldn't be out the door. And again, he needs to do a little bit more. It's not fair. It's not fair to him. But Melo, this is the game y'all playing. And those 30-plus owners are the guys that decide your fate. Those are the guys you got to tap dance for. And just casually viewing the games, seeing the media coverage, yo, Melo scored 20-something. Nobody ever doubted that, Melo. Nobody ever doubted that. You got to show him something different. You got to show him a better effort on defense. You got to show him that, yo, I could go get the glass. Like, transform into Dennis Rodman, something. It's looking like the same person that they cut. I mean, hell, Melo's even starting. A question a lot of these teams had was whether or not he'd be willing to come off the bench. That question hasn't been answered. Now, that's not Melo's fault if the team needs to start him, but I'm just saying, the questions the league had about Melo, I don't think any of them have been answered. And it's putting him in a position to be in the same boat at the end of the season, sitting somewhere hoping that the phone rings. I reached out to my man DA on this topic. I said, man, what do you think about Melo? And DA, he was like, yo, Will, he's letting the ball go faster, right? He's not holding the ball. He's making quicker decisions. He's rebounding. But DA is somebody that has had league pass for as long as I've known him. He was an all-conference performer in 2 different conferences, right? He really pays attention to the game. I'm afraid not all these GMs and these scouting departments are looking like that. Right? They read the headlines, oh, Melo scored, I'm not impressed. He needs to be more specialized. It can't be the same game. I want to make a prediction real quick. Yo, how am I doing in predictions? At the beginning of the season, I said Donovan Mitchell was going to be the NBA MVP. That's not really looking too good right now, right? I mean, it's not bad. Donovan Mitchell's playing well. We just didn't know that LeBron was going to find the fountain of youth. Giannis Antetokounmpo is still ascending. So that prediction doesn't look too good. But I want to go on record with another one. Prediction alert. We will not see Zion Williamson this season. I do not believe we will. I was watching the Pelican game the other day, and I thought, dang, ain't it about time for Zion? They said 6 to 8 weeks, and that was back in October. So I did a little Google search. I saw a couple of reports. Zion's going to need a little bit more time. To me, that was cold. That boy ain't playing this season. So put me on record as believing we will not see him this year. And when word comes out, we can discuss that a little bit further. But an individual we have seen plenty of this season is LeBron James. LeBron James and the Los Angeles Lakers have just been on the tear, man. They are in playoff form already. Just handling business. They only have 3 losses on the season. LeBron is suiting up every night with an enthusiasm and a hunger that has just been pretty cool to see. And I want to ask the audience, do you find it strange that so much energy and effort is being exhausted in this regular season, especially for LeBron James, who has played a lot of basketball, is in the 17th, 18th year of his career, you know, the advanced age of 35. For him to be pouring so much effort in a regular season, right? Especially in the era of load management, like why is he so hell-bent on playing? In fact, I got an article here from November 9th, 2019, ESPN, written by Dave McMenamin. And LeBron is quoted as saying, when speaking on load management, "If I'm hurt, I don't play. If not, I'm playing." So 2019, right? LeBron James, 35 years old, 17th, 18th year of his career. "If I'm not hurt, I'm playing." Don't y'all find that strange? Especially when I have an article from 2017, when LeBron was with the Cavs, right? Again, another ESPN story written by the same author, Dave McMenamin. And LeBron James says, this is after LeBron, Kyrie, and Kevin Love sat out a nationally televised game for rest. LeBron James was quoted as saying, and I quote, "I deserve to get a game every now and again," end quote. He speaks about playing through injuries his whole career. And he says, hey, if I need a night of rest, I deserve it. And basically an article, owners and management can't do anything about it. That was LeBron James's take on load management 2 years ago when he was younger. But now, right, with 2 more years of NBA games on his legs and his knees, he's hell-bent on playing every game. And the reason I think he's doing that is so he can temper championship expectations. Because when you sit out, you're telling the fans, yo, dog, we chasing that chip. Yo, dog, it's about the chip. You're telling the fans, you're telling the media that. I don't think LeBron wants that burden. That's why he's on this whole new wave. If I'm healthy, I'm playing, man. All these games matter, man. It's just so important, man. That's why he's so hell-bent on playing every night. Because he's trying to divert your attention from championships to, yo, guys, one game at a time. I just find it so strange that now that he's older and played longer, he wants to bring it every night because he wants to take that championship burden off of him. Because I believe he thinks the championship window is closing and passing him by. So by playing every day, bringing it every night, it's a way to be special. It's his specialization. Because at the end of the year, when maybe Kawhi or Giannis is holding the championship trophy and we look at the year in review, we say, yeah, they were the champion. But man, it was crazy how LeBron James played 82 games at 35 years old. It was crazy how he put up MVP numbers at 35 years old. It's a way to be in the conversation at the end of the year. Because if he allows the focus to be solely about championships, well, then if he doesn't win, his season is viewed as a failure. He doesn't want that. He doesn't want to be held to that standard. In Miami, in Cleveland, when it was all about chips, when he was in the running, when he felt he had a great shot, he was cool with that. Yeah, I need some rest every now and again. Yeah, I know what it's about. But now, with all those young apes and gorillas coming after him, I think he's trying to change that narrative. I think he's trying to be the sympathetic figure. Similar to Kobe in his last couple of years. Kobe's last couple of years, there was no championships going on. So what was a way for him to stay in the conversation? Yo, Kobe suits up every night, no matter the issue. Kobe could score 1,000,000 points if he wants to, right? Changing the discussion. You even look at when Kevin Durant left the Oklahoma City Thunder. Russell Westbrook knew the championship talk is done. So how can I continue to be in the national conversation? How can I lead SportsCenter? Oh, I'll become an Iron Man, play 82 games, and every night come watch me get a triple-double. That's the coming attraction. I found it ironic that LeBron James dismissed the idea of load management at this point in career as he's older when he was on board when he was younger. He just wants to change the narrative. We don't talk much college football on this show, but I did want to talk about Tua Tagovailoa. He is the quarterback for the University of Alabama. Recently in a college football game, he suffered a gruesome hip injury, an injury that could put his football future in jeopardy. He went on to have a successful surgery. He's going to rehab the injury, and hopefully he can get things back on track. Now, the dilemma he is facing is whether or not to return to the University of Alabama. You know, returning to school would give him the opportunity to show NFL teams, owners, and GMs that he is fully recovered, that he is healthy, and he warrants being drafted near the top of the draft. Or he could forego his senior season and will take a chance on him. Now, the downside to going into the NFL draft after such a gruesome injury is teams won't draft him, or he could slide down the draft board. And the more he slides down the draft board, the more money he would lose out on. Because, of course, the higher the pick, the more money he receives. If he slides down, he gets less money. So that's the dilemma he's facing right now. Many people have weighed in. What should he do? What should he do? If I was advising that man, I'd tell him, listen, boy, you better not play another down of college football. No, sir. There's nothing to gain there. There's nothing to accomplish. The NFL teams know exactly who you are. Shit, the Miami Dolphins have been accused of tanking for you all season. Tank for Tua. There's nothing to accomplish. The only reason you were in college football this year is because you got to be 3 years removed from your high school graduating class to go into the NFL. Your work is done on the field. Okay? Now it's time to exploit the competitiveness of NFL owners and GMs. You need to get you a good agent, somebody that can go into these offices and say, listen, man, y'all might want to take Tua, because if you don't take him, that team down the block will. And then you know what? That agent goes down the block. He says, listen, y'all better take Tua, because if you don't, that team up the block will. And you watch them NFL teams scramble. What should we do? What should we do? And they'll cave in. And they'll draft you. You know, if you got an agent that'll go out there and say, listen, if y'all don't take him in the first round, Bill Belichick might snatch him with his pick, be the heir apparent to Tom Brady, rehab him for a year. You can't play another down the college. It's too dangerous. He's had too many injuries. It's time to go get the money. Okay? And proponents of him going back to school, they say, well, Will, he needs to go back to school so he can show the NFL owners that he's healthy, and then he can stay at the top of the draft and get the money. I've mentioned this in a previous podcast when I talked about the draft and the NFL collective bargaining. Back in 2011, they put a cap on kind of like the rookie pay scales. So if you're the number one pick, you're getting about $22 to $30 million guaranteed. No longer are the days of Sam Bradford signing for $78 million, Matthew Stafford signing for $70-plus million. Those days are done. It's a cap on the number one pick. And in the grand scheme of football, $20 to $30 million ain't a big deal. It's the second contract where you get the $100 million-plus. So Tua needs to get that clock started ASAP. You need to get through that rookie contract ASAP. You can't do that going back to school. So even if you did slide, you go to the NFL, you get a paycheck, you rehab. Teams are intrigued because they've seen your talent. There's nothing else for you to prove, son. Get into an NFL facility, work your ass off, and get back. Get through that rookie contract, ball out so you could get to the $100 million. And I don't even think you're going to slide that much. These NFL owners, they don't want you to be gobbled up by that competition. Because just like I did, they seen you come off the bench in a national championship game as a true freshman and lead Alabama to the title. Alabama had an air game we've never seen. That's because of you. You got nothing else to show these guys. And there's precedence for this. You get yourself a good agent that could play the field, play the game, you're going to be just fine. I go back to 2003, the Fiesta Bowl. I remember watching this in real time. I was about 18 years old, right before I went to the Army. University of Miami running back Willis McGahee. He gets tackled. The defender's helmet collides with McGahee's knee. I remember watching that in real time. I said, dang, a human being's knee is not supposed to bend in that direction. It ain't supposed to go the opposite direction. But it did. And everybody held their breath like, oh, man, this young man's career is over. After that hit, he tore his ACL, MCL, LCL, all of that. People thought his career was done. Damn, what's he going to do? All right, so that's January of the year. The NFL draft is in May. What's he going to do? He gets himself NFL super agent Drew Rosenhaus. Right, so the day of the draft, you know how they show camera footage of the NFL prospect at home on the couch with his family waiting for the call to come in? Well, Drew Rosenhaus, understanding the game, he picks up his cell phone and he calls somebody. Who does he call? He calls his client, Willis McGahee, who was standing right next to him. He did that so when the cameras panned to them, it would appear that, dang, McGahee must be talking to some team. Dang, maybe somebody's interested. And what did it do? It caused teams to act. And next thing you know, the Buffalo Bills drafted Willis McGahee in the first round 4 months after destroying his knee. Now, to the Bills' credit, years after, they said, nah, we weren't sucker about Drew Rosenhaus. But, yo, it was a good tactic. These NFL owners are billionaires. They're gamblers. You got to exploit that. You got to exploit that penchant for the dramatic. You do not step foot back on the Alabama campus. Nothing to accomplish. Get in the NFL. Get past that rookie contract. And go get you $100 million. Anytime we are talking Dallas sports, I got to have my boy come through and chat with us. Right now on the line, I have my guy, Mr. Frank Barrow-Reedy. Barrow, what up?
Will, good to talk to you.
Before we get started, happy holidays to you. I want you to tell me and my New York audience, how do you guys celebrate Thanksgiving down there in Texas? I mean, is it city? Are you in the country? You on the back porch? You guys shooting skeet? Like, what's going on?
Well, I'll tell you what. Anyone in Texas, especially if you're in the Dallas area, everyone centers their Thanksgiving around the Cowboys game. So whether your mom cooks it at noon or does dinner at 7 p.m., all that matters is it doesn't happen during the Cowboys so that everybody can sit around and watch it together and be mad at the same things.
That's cool. That's cool. How long has that been a tradition for the Dallas Cowboys playing on Thanksgiving?
So that's actually from the days of Tex Schramm, and when no one wanted to play on Thanksgiving, he made a deal to say, okay, you don't want to do it, but we're going to get it every year, because he realized it would be the, you know, premier thing of the day. And so what he did is he had it set up so he would get a home game. As long as he had a home game on Thanksgiving, he would get exposure. And it just became a few years in, oh, okay, now people really care about it. But for a long time, that was a game that people didn't want to play because they didn't expect the audience to be there on a holiday.
Now people set their dinner time around that game, man. Let's get into your Cowboys. I mean, over the last few weeks, it seemed every day the conversation has been about Jason Garrett. Is it fair to say that you believe it's time for Jason Garrett to go?
Absolutely. I think, you know, I thought that 5 years ago, but at the same time, this year just kind of proves that you can give him all talent in the world and he's still not going to do anything.
That is exactly the question I wanted to ask you. I wanted to ask you, I know you believe he should be fired, but when? Now, you're saying he should have been fired 5 years ago. Why wasn't he let go 5 years ago?
Well, you look at it as an organization. You look at Jerry Jones, and Jerry Jones loved the yes man. He loved the guy that comes from his system, his family, that has been a part of the organization, that's kind of the anti-Parcells. And as much success as the Cowboys had under Parcells, I think it reinvigorated Jerry to do it his way, and right. So he wanted his guy, and so he's always going to be tied to Jason because of that.
Yo, Barrow, you didn't hear my opening salvo, but I am right with you. Jason Garrett's been around for 10 years. 10 years. Mm-hmm. There's nothing in his resume that said he should have that long of a tenure, especially after the great Bill Parcells only got 3. How do you feel as a fan knowing Jerry kind of doesn't really want somebody in there that's going to help him win, but he wants to do it his way?
Well, you got to look at it this way. In Texas, football is a religion, and the Cowboys are the patron saint. So for us, they're going to be Cowboys fans, do or die. It's kind of like in the Yankees, but even more so here, where even if they lose, they're still the Dallas Cowboys. Right. And the care and the feeling of a family, of as far as being this is their team, kind of permeates everyone here. And so even though they get frustrated with them, every Sunday they're going to watch. If you look at the TV ratings, they're going to be way bigger for the Cowboys year after year, even if they're having a 6-6 record like we are right now. It's just a matter of being part of the fabric of Dallas fans and Texas football fans.
Where does Jerry Jones go from here? You know, you guys talk about doing things big in Texas. Well, if he was serious about winning, go get you a blank check and bring it to Nick Saban, Dabo Swinney, Lincoln Riley. Like, do you think Jerry's going to go in the direction of somebody that's going to really help him win? Or is he looking for another yes man?
Well, I think the problem with Jason Garrett isn't the fact that it's not necessarily just his fault that he's failing. It's Jerry's failure as the owner slash GM that he is,
right,
to say, okay, this isn't working, we need to cut you. So obviously he doesn't want to quit a good thing. And so with Jerry, he would love to spend as much money on the most expensive yes man you could get, let's just say a Saban. But Saban's not going to want to come in and have his decision second-guessed by the owner who's acting as a pseudo-GM along with Stephen Jones and the rest of the organization that kind of still placates the idea that Jerry wants to win one under his banner that's not associated with Jimmy Johnson. So he's going to do everything he can do to find that placeholder that can still say it was Jerry's team, but coached by this personality. So, yes, he would love to spend $10 million and bring in Belichick, but Belichick wouldn't play for someone like Jerry, wouldn't play ball with him. So I think that that's where the contradiction lies on ultimate winning.
So you guys might be in line for another yes, man.
Yep, until Jerry is off the throne, I think that's just going to be the case.
This is what I really wanted to ask you, though. Barrow, you're born and raised in Texas, right?
Absolutely.
All right, outside of some military time, some travel, you've lived in New York as well. In fact, that's where we met. You lived the New York City life. Like, I think you lived in Chelsea or the Village.
The Village, yep.
You got up, you got on the train, you had your MetroCard. You lived that New York life. In fact, you were a season ticket holder with the New York Knicks, right?
I was, and it was a great time while I was there.
This is what I want to ask you, man. Okay, because I think, you know, some great marketing has made Jerry Jones one of the world's most famous owners and likable owners. And I want to ask you, what is the difference between Jerry Jones, who I mentioned is everybody's favorite, and Jim Dolan, the much maligned owner of the New York Knicks? Hold on, Brad. Let me tell you how I set that up. I said, Jerry, he got the most valuable franchise in the NFL. Well, guess what? Guess what? Jim Dolan got the most valuable franchise in the NBA and the NHL. So to me, that's a wash. Jerry Jones has Jerry World. Well, guess what? James Dolan presides over the world's most famous arena. They both got their facilities. I don't see my, and in fact, if I wanted to give the nod to somebody, I would give it to Jim Dolan because he put his ego to the side and brought in one of the top 50 greatest players, Isaiah Thomas, one of the best coaches ever, Phil Jackson. Unfortunately, it didn't work out, but he was able to put his ego aside and try to bring in outside help. Barrow, what's the difference between Jerry Jones and Jim Dolan?
That's very easy. Jerry Jones has figured out how to play the media. He knows how to work the good old boy. You know, I'm just this hick from Arkansas that made $1 billion, and now I got the most expensive franchise in the world, and gosh darn it, media, come and have a whiskey with me, and we'll go party and on Bourbon Street during a Super Bowl in which my team's not even playing. Let's go talk. And he's made everyone rich within the NFL. So all the other NFL owners love him. Therefore, the NFL loves him because he's now turned the NFL into a merchandising behemoth on a global scale. So all of the fans, you know, let's just say, you know, a rising tide raises all ships.
Yes, sir.
In this case, he's made money for so many people and put so many eyes on his team that them losing, as long as they do it with style, he doesn't really lose any money. And he's still going to make money even if they do lose because of the way he has played everyone to believe that, you know, he had his three Super Bowls And he loves to tell you about his three Super Bowls that Jimmy, you know, earned for him, but he was the owner at the time and technically the GM. But in reality, he can rest on those championships, whereas Dolan, he can't rest on the championships. So at very least, when Jimmy, you know, leaves this earth, he still has those three Super Bowls that, whether they're his or not, in, you know, what we think of, he can still claim them. And so what he wants is that legacy, that one more. But when it comes down to it, he still has those. And he can still say, I was America's team at their pinnacle. And Jerry was a part of that.
Gotcha. Gotcha. I feel, when I really sat back and looked at it, I didn't really see much of a difference, man. In fact, Jerry Jones, I feel, has been in the way of the Dallas Cowboys. But I appreciate you on that. Give me what you got on the Mavericks before we get out of here, man. You been enjoying the show?
Absolutely. Like I told you at the beginning of the season, this is going to be special. But I didn't expect it to be this good this quick. Right. And I won't say that, you know, knock on wood, no one gets hurt. Porzingis is slowly getting back into a healthy, you know, he's getting a lot of minutes. And so I think we all expected him to take his time to build up, and it's taken him a little more time. But it's taken Luka no time at all to figure out how to play basketball on an elite level. Not just, hey, I'm a rookie of the year, now I'm just going to improve. Instead, he can go toe-to-toe with the biggest guys on the NBA and say, you know what, we've got a good team with a great rotation players that, you know, becomes a matchup problem. And I don't think we're going to be, you know, in the championship or anything like that, but we're a playoff team, and that wasn't expected to begin the year. We were going to be on the periphery. That makes me so happy that we can at least compete, that you give us one game, we will give you a game. We might not win a series, but we can win a game.
I do have one more for you. I know you are a fan of college football. I want to ask you about Alabama quarterback Tua Tagovailoa. He had a devastating hip injury. And now the conversation is whether he should go back to school and show, I guess, NFL teams that he's healthy, he's back to 100%, or take his chances in the NFL draft next spring and possibly fall out of the first round, lose out on some money, shoot, may not even be drafted at all. What do you think, if you were advising that young man, what would you tell him to do?
Well, if he goes back to Alabama, other than under the table, he's not going to be paid. So at very least, if he makes it in the second round, he'll get some money. And here's the thing. It's all going to be about, you know, the injury. And if he does respond well and looks good, at least he's not the number one pick and he doesn't have to go play for the Bengals. So at his best chance now to play for a good team and maybe be a good backup for a year or two behind a guy like maybe the Chargers, behind Phillip Rivers, or behind some of these aging QBs, it may be to fall late in the first, second, and third to be that next guy that can heal for a year. So, you know, long term, that may not be the worst case. He doesn't have to be thrown to the wolves and just heal quick. He can spend that time to work on his you know, NFL readiness, because that's a whole nother game, but he's got the talent, and maybe this is just, you know, a blessing in disguise for him to not have to play for the Miamis of the world.
All right, bro. Thank you.
Hey, it's an absolute pleasure, and I hope to talk again.
Yo, that was my man, Barrow. Always appreciate him stopping by. Before I get out of here, I just want to say happy holidays to everybody. Sending my well wishes. You know, my boy K-Mac, he works in the hospital, in the mental health clinic. He says this time of year, there is an uptick in patients, an uptick in the amount of people they see, because it's the holidays. You know, around the holidays, I guess the theme is being with your family, happy, love, joy. But if you don't have that in your life, right, whatever struggles you're probably going through is magnified. Because everywhere you look, you see season's greetings and be with your family. So this is a tough time for people who may be struggling. And I just want to send my well wishes to everybody, yo. I know it's real out there, and I just implore you guys to keep fighting. You know, shit, many a days I don't feel like getting out of the bed. I don't want to leave my house. So I know it's real. And I'm somebody that gets credited for, yo, Will, you got to figure it out. Yeah, bullshit. Bullshit. But I to all my people, salute, keep fighting. And I'm out.